You're listening to.
You're listening to.
The Homo Homie Podcast.
Representing, educating, and unifying our queer comunidad.
Also, a gay craft course 101 for the hetero. I'm your host, Eric V.
And I'm your co-host, Jose Resendez.
A fun kickback podcast for all our homo homies and raza.
We invite you to download, stream, and share
to find out what's good in the hood. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Homo Homie Podcast. I'm Eric V, your host. Please welcome my co-host,
Jose Resendez.
Before we start today's episode, we want to make sure that you are sharing, streaming, and also subscribing to our podcast and making sure that you're following us at the Homo Homie Podcast, because that's where you can find us.
Yeah, so make sure to keep sharing these episodes with all the homo homies. Let me get right into it, because today's topic is really hot, because you guys know I'm a big pop culture fanatic. This is going to be more like Hollywood's queer Latinx agenda part two. And let me explain that, because in season one, we had episode number 3, and it featured actually our co-producer, Roman Navarrete, who is actually today's special co-host. And Roman did a special episode with Enrique Zapene, who's a TV host for LA TV on the Q Agenda. And they actually had an episode called Hollywood's Queer Latinx Agenda. And it talked about what to watch, what's going on with queer Latinx representation, not only on streaming channels, but also like in the big screen, in the movie theaters. And so without further ado, I want to introduce to you guys again, Roman.
Hey, everybody. Thank you, Jose, for that, setting up the table for everybody. That, you know, that was a really fun episode to do with you guys. I felt the four of us were really, you know, dissecting things that were on the, you know, TV, things that were coming, actors, storylines. You know, we touched upon Pose quite a bit, Vida, a new show at the time that hadn't come out yet, called We Are Here, with the drag queens from RuPaul. That hit HBO, and it turned out to be a huge hit, you know, and we were talking about it prior. We had no idea, but it turned out to be a massive hit on mainstream HBO, you know? So I thought that was really great.
And that episode was actually pretty popular, right, Eric? It was like, I remember it was episode number 3 in season 1, and we were looking at how many listeners we have per episode, and that one was pretty popular. And I think it's because, you know, I always Google like things to watch that are gay, you know, like, or that are Latino, because you don't always see it on the home screen for like Netflix or Hulu. So sometimes you have to do that extra step of research. And so that's why I'm glad we have Roman, who has so many years of experience in Hollywood. And this time around, he has two different guests that are coming on board. Right, Roman?
Yeah. You know, and equally as excited about these two. And just, I wanted to go back one second with, you know, Enrique, that day when we were talking, that was the first time I had met Enrique, and we totally hit it off. And since then, we have been working together nonstop on a few things like Hispanicize. And, you know, one thing that Enrique and I always do is that we're always infusing the LGBTQ agenda into everything that we do, and whether that is Hispanicize or working with a client, doing some stuff with the Q Agenda now. And so equally excited about these two that are coming up. And it reminds me, I had a conversation recently, and somebody referred to me as an LGBTQ warrior. And I got what she was saying right off the bat. And I know those warriors too in the community, and those people who are always fighting to infuse this in whatever kind of work they do. And for me, it's pop culture. For me, it's television and influencer campaigns and everything. And so when I think about these two guests, Victor Barrerio and Jose Rodriguez, you know, these are two LGBTQ warriors. These are two people that I have seen in the past 20 years. I met Victor like 20 years ago. Teen Choice Awards, I worked on very heavily, and he was on the red carpets. And I've seen, you know, like Victor move up and do the Oscar red carpets and live events. And Jose has, you know, is the head of publicity at Pantaleon Films and Pantalla. And that is a Spanish market of films that really has continuously also infused LGBTQ in storylines. And so when I think of that phrase, LGBTQ warrior, I think of people like Victor and Jose. And it's my pleasure to bring them today to talk to you guys. And I think we're going to have a really hot discussion, just like we did last year.
And I just wanted to say thank you so much, Roman, for, you know, bringing these guests on for us. We love having these segments and these episodes with you because it just shows how much representation there is out there and it's needed. And a lot of people don't know that, you know, we are working really hard behind the scenes for our LGBTQ plus community in the entertainment field. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break, and then we're going to come back with our special guest that Roman brought. Right, and we're back from the break, and we're gonna go ahead and let our special co-host Roman Navarrete go ahead and introduce our next guest.
Yes, it is my pleasure. As we were talking about a little while ago about LGBTQ warriors, Jose Rodriguez, VP publicity at Pantaleon and Pantalla Films. I've known him for quite a few years now, and the last time I think I physically saw him was at a premiere or some sort of event downtown, and just being able to watch him in action running the show, you know, like, you know that this guy's in charge. When you're looking, you're like, this guy's running the show. And I just feel proud. You know what I mean? It's this sense of pride that you feel. And so, Jose, tell us a little bit about your role right now in the industry.
Well, thank you so much for those beautiful comments. I think, you know, it's so good to just see that point of view, because usually when we're working, and I think Jose can relate to this, is we don't even know what we're doing. We're just running and trying to figure things out. So that's actually really great. So right now, currently, I am at Pantaleon Films. So it's the first Latinx film studio in Hollywood. And this is a film studio that it's, you know, part of Lionsgate, the big Hollywood studio. And also Pantalla, which is the only Spanish language streaming service in the country. I've been part of Pantaleon for 8 years already, and part of Pantalla for 3 years. So, you know, currently I'm the VP of publicity. And also I kind of support them with any talent relations need, you know, and it's actually goes from the publicity side. I take care of all the publicity campaigns from any movies or series, you know, that we have currently on our platform, because the theatrical business is not happening at the moment. And it's just been great, you know, just to work in a company which I feel respected, and they hear my voice, and I'm able to work with extremely talented filmmakers and actors that are from Mexico, LATAM, and Spain, from everywhere. So I think it's just exciting to kind of be part of that community.
That's awesome. I mean, I love the fact that you do get to sort of branch out as well, work with the talent, work with the producers, everybody to try to come together. So was this always like an interest of yours? Like when you were growing up, like what was that? Tell us a little bit about that little boy growing up. Like where did you grow up, and did, you know, were you always fascinated by movies, or what sort of, you know, what was that bug that bit you?
So I was born in Sinaloa, Mexico, 37 beautiful years ago. You know, I remember that when, you know, when I was a little boy, I was just fascinated by television. You know, every time that I would see Lucerito coming on screen, you know, or Yuri or Gloria Trevi, I was just so in awe, you know, the way that they were just killing it, you know, that they were, you know, just watching that power that they had to entertain. I was just so attracted by that. But I never thought that I was going to end up, you know, working in the industry. It wasn't until I moved to the U.S. when I was 14. And then I started, it's going to sound so weird, but that's when I started kind of listening to pop music and it, you know, on my own. You know, I was buying Shakira cassettes. Do you guys remember those cassettes? Yeah. You know, Shakira, and I was just like so, again, just so attracted to pop culture, you know, en español. And I became a huge fan of this pop group, Mexican pop group, Cabá. You know, it was, you know, yeah. three boys and three girls, you know, and their music was so positive. I think the music had a positive message of acceptance, of loving yourself and just living your life. And when I discovered them, I just became the biggest fan. You know, I mean, I was 14, 15, and I started calling every radio station in the country, sending letters to newspapers, calling producers, calling TV stations. I was just calling everyone, you know, just requesting their music. And that's when I kind of discovered that I had something in me, you know, that had, I had, my voice had the power to make things happen. And it wasn't until I met them that I discovered that I kind of wanted to be in this business, but also I discovered myself, because that's when I decided to come out. And I think their music had a big influence in, you know, in me on accepting who I really was. So I don't want to make the story so long. So when I turned 18, I got a call from programming director of a radio station. And she's like, Jose, you've been calling to request Cava music 24/7. Everyone knows you. They know you. So, you know, I think you have a future in the music industry. I was just like, okay. It's like, I see you as a radio promoter. I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but okay. She's like, can I just get your number? And I would just call you if I hear of anything. I'm like, sure. So a few months later, she called me and she's like, you know, a friend of mine has an internship open at Universal Music Latino. And back in the day, Eduardo Verástegui released a record. Paulina Rubio was the hottest girl in the music industry. And, you know, Enrique Iglesias and Juanes were like, you know, blooming. And I was just like, of course. I'm like, I don't even know what an internship is, but okay, I'm just going to go for it. So, you know, she explained the whole thing. And at the second that I walked into Universal Music, I thought in my head, I'm going to see all of these big celebrities in the label, right? I'm going to see Paulina Rubio. I'm going to see Eduardo Verástegui and Juanes and Enrique Iglesias and everyone. To my surprise, I did not see anybody. And I was just kind of heartbroken. I was just like, wait a second. I'm like, this is just like a regular office, regular people behind their phones. So that's when I, you know, I saw, you know, I had the opportunity to be an intern at Universal Music for a year. I started, you know, doing mailers, you know, just putting their albums in an envelope and printing UPS labels or updating the database. It was actually calling people and verifying their fax number and the address. It was just insane. And I think that's when I saw that for the first time, Monica Escobar, who is the owner right now of the Three Collective, a PR firm. I saw her pitching a musician to one of the major networks. And when I saw her, I was like, wait a second, I just want to be just like her. I'm like, I want her job. And that's when it happened.
Love Monica.
Yeah, she's amazing. So that's how I kind of discovered that I wanted to be in this industry.
Wow. You know? So you went from like super fan to reaching out to fans. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm proud of it, you know, because, you know, on my many years of working in the industry, you know, the music industry, you know, I worked the last two records from RBD, you know, we're talking 10, 12 years ago. So every time that I got to travel, I would see the fans and they were familiar with my face, with my name, and they were so nice. And I always try to keep them with respect because, again, everyone deserves respect. But I think once they're actually taking the time to support your career, I think we have the you know, we need to respect them, and I'm just so proud of that part of my history.
I have a quick question about that as a lesson in publicity. Do you teach that value to your clients, to your celebrity clients? Because a lot of times celebrities, especially Latino celebrities, can come across rude or divas or this or that. There's rumors. But working with certain celebrities, like I know you worked a lot with Maite Perroni, who I worked with for many years as well for her beauty promotions. She's genuinely nice. But sometimes you have clients, I'm not going to name them, that you have to tell them like, hey, be nice. Like, these are fans. They've been waiting here all night trying to get a photo with you or an autograph or something. Do you teach that value, you know, of these fans and how loyal they are?
Definitely. And by the way, you know, Maite is one of the most genuine and beautiful and sweet, you know, ladies in the industry. The way that you see her on screen, that's the way that she is. You know, she's just the best. And one of the things that, you know, and I think this started happening once I started working in the film industry, because I felt that back in music, everything was back to back. It was just so fast. I remember that 1 month at EMI, you know, we had albums from Belinda and Alex Sintek and Alejandra Guzman and this and that. And I just did not have the time to even process anything. So when I started working in the film industry, my first year at Pantaleon, the way that I discovered that this was going to work for me was by having an honest conversation with the actors, right? And I do remember that when you know, at a press junket, I'm not going to say the name of this actor. You know, I walk in, I heard so many comments of him, right, on social media and people that kind of knew him. So I walk into his, you know, his room and I told him, like, hey, listen, you know, we're going to be spending 3 weeks of our life together, traveling the whole country, promoting a beautiful film that you worked so hard to, you know, for this dream of you, of yours, you know, to become a reality. So we need to communicate, you know, and you need to be conscious that press is going to take their time to talk to you, to promote your film, you know, as you are actually taking the time to go and meet with them. So I think we need to treat each other with respect and also fans, you know, and that's when we kind of started opening up, we opened up about, you know, what he liked and disliked, you know, like maybe he did not like, you know, giving autographs. So that's kind of the thing that I had the power to control, right? So I think it's just really important. I think communication overall, I mean, we work in PR and I think communicating with the client and the and press and also the audience, it's just extremely important. So I definitely do that.
You know, I love that question, Jose, and it gave us, you know, a really good look into this Jose's career. And, you know, because like when I said I see you on a red carpet, it looks, you know, on the outside looking in, it looks easy. You know what I mean? It looks like, oh, he's running everything. But just like you said, there are all these little things that are like behind the scenes that you're orchestrating every day up until that point. And so, you know, what I love about publicity is that field has like grown in terms of responsibility. It used to be just like, oh, let, you know, we got to coordinate these interviews and this, but now you actually have a lot of FaceTime with the producers and with the film creators. So as we're talking about LGBTQ representation, can you like give us some examples or how in depth do you get when you're talking to a film creator about this representation and making sure that it is positioned in the correct way and not, you know, because, you know, being gay in the Mexican culture, right, it hasn't always been, you know, that accepting. So how do you straddle both of that? Like, how do you, you know, you're kind of in this main power position here, you know, and being a gay Latino, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so two things. I think, you know, what you are able to see usually when there's a red carpet or at an event, or actually when you see someone on the cover, you know, there are just so many things that are happening behind the scenes, you know, from coordinating sometimes transportations and flights and glam and makeup and food and the whole thing, and making sure that celebrities arrive to the red carpet, making sure that the theater is full, making sure that the movie is going to play well, making sure that the sound is going to be great. I think there's just so many components that I think our mission is to, you know, I think in publicity is for the audience to have that experience. You know, like if you see that from the outside, you are seeing everything is perfect. That's the magic of the entertainment industry as a whole, right? And to your second, you know, to the actual question, I think I just love where I'm at right now because I'm able to speak up, right? And I think everyone has done, you know, their job before us, you know, before our generation, for us to be able to speak up and actually tell, you know, those filmmakers, you know, the stories that our audience wants to see, and you know, from casting to you know, the scripts to when to release to the, you know, comments on the poster. I think now we're just more open to having the conversation. And I think it used to be kind of that uncomfortable question or that uncomfortable situation, conversation. And I think now they're more open. You know, I've had many experiences in which gay filmmakers, you know, didn't know that, you know, can I say bad words here?
Yeah, most definitely.
So, you know, they did not know that, you know, maricón was not a term to use, right? And once I told them, you know, the reasons why, and I pull up, you know, the GLAAD amazing, you know, document that they have, the guide. And I'm like, you know what, this is the reasons why you cannot use maricón. And he was like, oh, wait a second. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, and it's totally fine not to know the beautiful things that you're asking why we're not able to use this term. And I think now we, again, there at Pantalla and Pantaleon, I get to speak up my mind on casting. You know, one of the missions that we have now as we are growing on Pantalla, it's, you know, to be more inclusive. We have a lot of LGBTQ content on our platform, but I think now we are kind of on that stage in which we just want to include gay actors, you know, LGBTQ actors overall, and give them the opportunity to you know, to be working, you know, and I think that's one of the things that we're doing now. And I think me as a, you know, personally, I'm just so passionate about just speaking up, you know, not remaining quiet. You know, I think, you know, Mexican and gay in the film and streaming industry, it is hard, but I think if I don't speak up my mind, then who's going to know what I'm thinking, right?
You know, the four of us, right, on this chat, we do our thing in media and LGBTQ media, and we love it. But we also are big fans, right, of pop culture and specific television shows. And this time of COVID has been really interesting because with you can't go out, you can't do anything. So we're all binging like nonstop, you know, and binging from the streaming platforms. And so, you know, I look back on the year and I remember what came out what month. And, you know, so, you know, when we kicked off, you know, shortly right before COVID, Hentified had come out, and really Netflix gave it a lot of love, and, you know, kudos to them for that. And also, you know, Julissa Calderon for representation in the Afro-Latina space. And it showed us, you know, a lesbian relationship in East LA. And, you know, that did very well, and very well for Latinos. And that's, you know, shooting a second season, I think, in early next year. So we're going to see that next year. But also one thing that one show that I know you're a big fan of, and I'm a huge fan too, is Love, Victor. Yes. And I know you and I have talked about Love, Victor, and our love for this representation of this storyline. And, you know, when you were mentioning a little while ago about the band that you were sort of in love with and that was inspired and taught you that self-acceptance and love, that really was what Love, Victor was. You know, it really showed his self-acceptance, his love, and his tribe and all of that. So there's a theme here. There's a theme here with LGBTQ people in the industry and the projects we're putting out and what we're consuming. So tell me why you loved Love, Victor so much.
Ooh, there are just so many things that I loved, you know, from Michael's performance. I think it was just so genuine. And so I think on the first, you know, maybe 15 seconds, I text someone that, you know, a friend that was working on the campaign, and I told her, I'm like, whoa, I'm like, who is this kid? I'm like, I could see myself on his eyes. I think it was just that vulnerable, how vulnerable he was able to put the, you know, the performance, and how sweet and how confused his character was, that I was just like, wait a second, this is me when I was 16, right? And I think the whole story is just beautiful, especially, you know, from his performance, but also like the parents. You know, I think Ana Ortiz, I think, is the mom, and you know, and the dad. I was just like, wait a second, is that, this is just the way that our parents are, you know, sometimes they just, you know, don't want to look at actually what's happening out there. And a beautiful thing that happened to me with Love, Victor is that during that week when the show premiered, I was talking to a really dear friend of mine, and he was kind of on that process of coming out, you know, and he's in his 20s. And, you know, we were just talking, and he said, you know, what's your advice? And I told him, I'm like, listen, I'm like, you first of all need to accept yourself for who you are. You know, that's the most important thing. And it's really tough, but it's like, if you're already, you know, talking about it and questioning, you know, and kind of knowing that you want to come out, that means that you already know who you are. And I told him, I'm like, you know, I'm going to be here for you, and whatever you need, you know, just know that you have a whole community that is going to support you, the community of your friends that are going to support you. And you know, we hugged. This was obviously, you know, before COVID, and no, it was actually during COVID, but we did not hug, sorry. Then I got home and I started watching the show. And after, you know, watching, you know, a few of the episodes, I sent him a message. And I'm like, you need to watch this. I think this is going to resonate to you. And I think this is going to be a good way for you to experience, you know, what you are going through, and the way that you can see your story basically on screen. The next day he texts me, and he's like, this has been one of the best shows that I've seen in my life. You know, I'm going to talk to my mom. I'm going to talk to my dad. And, you know, I'm just happy that you put the show in front of my television, you know. And I think that's the beauty of storytelling, right? I think that's when you know that, you know, filmmaking and storytelling can change people's lives. You know, I think the way that Love, Victor, I think it should be screened at every high school, you know, because yes, it's just beautifully done. It's just a fascinating story.
Did you watch part one?
Yeah. So the Love, Simon, I thought it was, again, I think it was great, you know, but I'll, yeah, you know, when I and it became one of my favorite films. But then with Love, Victor, what happened is that, you know, it does not scream, you know, that Victor is Latino and that, you know, that he has a flag, you know, walking, you know, around the street with, you know. I think the only kind of interaction that you have with the story that, you know, tells you that he's Latino is, you know, with his parents, you know, kind of that yes. culture. But again, it happens to us, you know. And I think that's why I think it's a great show and I love it.
I recommend that show to everyone. It's so powerful.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely probably one of my favorites, you know, looking back on the year. And what's interesting is when a show like that breaks, it's the word of mouth, you know, and Latinos, we have that word of mouth like no others, and gay Latinos in particular. Social media, we over-index in social media. And so when the show comes out, everybody starts posting like, oh my God, you have to see this. You have to, you know, drop everything right now. And so you know that it's good. You know that something's good and I'm going to like it as a Latino. It's going to speak to me. And, you know, and so another show that has been getting that buzz lately has been the HBO Max Veneno. And
Dios de mi vida. Perdón, I'm going to jump on this one, but I'm just going to say Dios de mi vida. Woman. And I don't know if you guys have been able to check it.
I have not seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but I've been seeing so much of the, like, the reviews and everybody's excited about it. And it's getting a lot of buzz.
Yes. And like you said, you know, I think social media, it's insane. I follow the directors, you know, Los Javis, you know, from Spain, and you know, they started retweeting RuPaul and Laverne Cox and like all of this big, you know, LGBTQ, you know, celebrities. And I was just like, wait a second, I'm like, I need to check this out. Not gonna lie to you, I went to bed like around like 3-4 in the morning watching videos of La Veneno, the real Veneno, you know, so it's based on, you know, on this, you know, trans, you know, character in, you know, the trans woman in Madrid, you know, back in the 80s, you know, and a reporter goes to the park where, you know, she used to work and, you know, she interviews her and then she goes viral before we even know what viral was. And she just became the most famous, you know, trans woman in Spain. You know, so we're talking that this was back in the 90s. I did not know about her and her story and her legacy until now. And I think, not going to lie to you, I've been dreaming. I'm following every single actress because the beauty of it is that every trans character in the show is trans. You know, so I think it was most of them, you know, this was their first project that they did, you know, and you can see, I mean, it's just entertaining. It's heartbreaking. It's funny. I'm just fascinated by Veneno. For me, not going to lie to you, I love Victor so much, but I think Veneno, it's also a show that we need to all watch, you know, because it's giving light, you know, especially to the trans community, you know, in a beautiful way. You know, you see all sides of the story, you know, with, you know, Veneno's story and again, just by, you know, the directors and the writers, you know, they're a gay couple, you know, I think they're actually married, you know, and making this story, you know, come to life.
Wow.
It just, for me, I think it's not the best. I think it's the best show that I've seen this year.
And I think that these networks like HBO have, because Roman talks to me about this a lot, like they know that there is a humongous audience out there for LGBT, but also allies, you know, people who may not be LGBT, but that doesn't matter. I mean, the gays know how to entertain, you know, so it's good regardless if you can relate to those stories, like it's still good entertainment, you know, so these companies are doing the right thing. And obviously they're bringing in revenue. Right. So I'm just curious, like, how hard is it for these networks and why don't we see more LGBT entertainment in general? Like, why is it so hard to get there? You know, like we were talking about, what was it? Love, Victor was going to be like on Disney Plus and then it got brought down to Hulu because they weren't sure. Like, you know,
yeah. I mean, and I do want to give HBO Max big kudos for Veneno. And also, you know, because a couple of weeks ago during Trans Awareness Week that they officially kicked it off. And I thought, okay, they're putting a big push behind this. They sponsored this big conference that was having a lot of transgender youth stories and input. And they brought in Laith Ashley as a host. And, you know, I saw a big push. And to my pleasure, a few days ago, I saw on social media, and also Jose had sent me the same post from Laith again. So it wasn't just sort of like a one-off, you know, it was like a campaign with legs. And I really love that, that, you know, I feel like all the streaming networks really get the multicultural piece and the LGBTQ piece. And it's not just about because it's the right thing to do or whatever, you know, like they really want to be inclusive. And they know that it's good business, you know? So I really do think that's the streaming networks are where you're going to find a lot of these stories. So I think, you know, Jose, we're going to see more and more on some of these streaming platforms. I do think it's been an uphill battle, but, you know, I like to look at the glass half full. You know, I think there's more and more. And it used to be that they just thought, well, you know, it's going to be a very niche sort of story and we're not going to be able to get wide appeal. But, you know, as we're seeing with some of these shows, you know, like Pose or, you know, there are a lot of shows that cast a wide net of appeal, and you don't have to be LGBTQ to appreciate it, to know that it's a good storyline. I mean, when you're talking about Pose and you're talking about MJ Rodriguez as the mother, you know, Blanca, you know, everybody can relate to having that figure, you know what I mean? Everybody can relate. And also within our community, you know, I didn't need to be trans to appreciate that, because every gay guy growing up had that gay big brother, you know, that person we looked up to that took us under our wing. So when I was watching Pose and MJ Rodriguez, I'm like, I know this relationship she has, you know, like, so, you know, again, I want to keep thinking glass half full. And Jose, what are some of the things that Panteleon and Pantaya, you know, as you've seen the changes and you've seen the inclusiveness, what are some of those strong titles that either from the past or maybe you can, you know, share something that might be coming up or in a library or something for people to check out?
Yeah, I think to your last point, I think that the success of all of the shows, I think that the stories are so relatable from either one side or, you know, from side A or side C, you know, I think that's the importance of these shows, you know, that again, everyone can relate to those characters or the situations. And I think that's one of the priorities that we have at Pantaya currently, you know, or streaming service. You know, this year we released Anna, which is a show inspired by some of Ana de la Reguera's big, you know, moments throughout life, you know, and on the show you can see, you know, a lesbian character, her sister who is lesbian, and she's a big LGBTQ advocates in Mexico City, you know, Ali Lua, I think that's her name. And it was nominated for a GLAAD award. It was nominated for Imagen Award. And it got a lot of buzz and a lot of, you know, attention on social media. And the show is just beautifully done, because also it does not alienate and does not minimize the, you know, kind of the community, right? Another show, and we're shooting season two of El Juego de las Llaves, and, you know, we released the show 2 years ago. It stars Maite Perroni, and it's a really hot and spicy series. You know, it's a group of, you know, four couple of friends, you know, and they decide to swing, you know, they decide to intercambiar parejas between them. And then towards the end, there's a scene, you know, one of the main characters, Horacio Pancheri, you know, he comes out, you know, and that's basically where the season one ends. And now we started shooting season two in Mexico. We added Alejandra Guzman, so it's her big comeback to the show, to television. And you're going to see a lot of more of that story, right? And I think a conversation that I had with GLAAD when we released El Juego de las Llaves, it was because that Horacio's character, Valentin, it was beautifully done, you know? Again, like the same thing that happened with Love, Victor, you know, for me, you could see how confused and how vulnerable he was, you know, when he had, you know, anybody, you know, like any presence of, you know, of hot guy, you know, he got a little nervous. And I think you started seeing that and his character started developing really beautifully. Besides those shows are, you know, I think we're going to see more of Ana and Juego de las Llaves. We also have, you know, Cindy La Regia, that it was a big film in Mexico, you know, last year, you know, it features, you know, a lesbian couple, Un Padre No Tan Padre, that was released theatrically 3 years ago, and now it's on the service. You know, it features also a gay couple. You know, we have Quebranto, that is the story of this you know, trans woman in Mexico that, you know, went through so many hard things, and that documentary won so many prizes in Mexico. And I think we do have, I think it's just a matter of looking for content, right? I think we're just so used to knowing, you know, platform ABC, but just so you know that there's just so many platforms out there, and there's just so many stories that are being made. It's just a matter of being open to checking them out.
Yeah. So are you one of the few LGBTQ plus Latinos at Pantalla?
No. Okay. We have more. And I think for me, and I think I shared this with you, that it's about, you know, again, I go back to communicating and speaking up, mm-hmm. right? I think I have this communication with my team, especially with our amazing CEO, you know, that we talk about it. You know, I remember that when I first started at Pantalla and Pantaleon, you know, I started setting up meetings with GLAAD, you know, and we started, you know, kind of talking about, you know, the content and how, you know, we need to be more inclusive. And now, you know, fast forward to the now, you know, we are able to, he the other day asked me, he's like, Jose, if you think XYZ character needs to be an LGBTQ character, you know, just let me know. Like, come on, the door is open. It's up to, you know, how you guys want to do it. And you're going to hear more about this amazing project that we're going to start production next year. I cannot say names, but, you know, it happened that there was the best friend of the main lead, you know, the description of the character was like, she was so adorable, bubbly, gorgeous, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, once I read the script, I was like, guys, I mean, how come this character cannot be a gay character? You know, it's like everyone has a gay bestie or a lesbian or trans or bisexual. I mean, come on, why does it need to be just the regular, no quiero decir personaje básico, but it's like, come on, let's spice it up. And they're like, you know what, you are right. It's like, come on, it's like we need to start being more inclusive because we have the power. People are watching. And when I say people, it's like the audience is watching. And I think it's a big responsibility in a way. We're kind of educating the audience, you know, what they're watching on television, you know, they'll go back to the real world. And I think it's just important for them to realize that, you know, we're there, that we're doing things, that we are successful, that we have a voice. So that's kind of one of the things that I just wanted to say.
You know what, that is perfect. That is a perfect way to end this segment. You know, before you joined us, we were talking about the notion of LGBTQ warriors, you know, people that are out there infusing representation, inclusiveness, and you just gave us a really great example of that. And Jose and Eric, if he's not an example of an LGBTQ warrior, you know, like, I mean, who is? But, you know, thank you for that. Thank you for working for us, you know, working for us behind the scenes. We need more people like you. So keep doing it. Eric, do you want to take us?
Can I just say one more thing, one brief thing? I think, yes, I'm kind of doing, you know, the work, but I think we as a community, as a collective, we also need to show up, right? You know, Stream Veneno, you know, let's support Love Victor. You know, I think Vida was fascinating. Gentify is great. You know, Pantalla, we have Fuego de las Llaves and Ana and so many more content. And I think it's just, you know, watching and supporting. And I appreciate you guys for having me here, because this is what, you know, how the industry needs to look. You know, let's have those conversations and let's share our stories and let's elevate, you know, our success, you know? So I really appreciate you guys.
Thank you so much, Jose. And I just want to emphasize on the fact that words can't express how much we're grateful for you to be a representation for nuestra comunidad, LGBTQ, and just being that voice of reason and inclusion, working behind those sets and working with those directors and artists and letting them know about our community, you know? And that's a big step in unity. So can you please go ahead and share with us your social media? Where can we find you? Any websites?
So you can find me on Instagram as Jose in LA. And that's where you're going to see me. And there's a link to Pantalla on my bio. And, you know, if there's anything, you know where to find me. Just DM me and I'm going to be open to hear anything that you guys have to say.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we can't wait to see more of your projects in the works and more of you. So, all right. And we will be right back with our next guest. And we are are back, guys. Okay, and Roman has another guest for us, another special guest. So go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, we know a lot of you enjoy watching those red carpets, all that glitz and glam. And so we have a man that runs the behind the scenes, running around producing the live events for the Oscars, Golden Globes. Straight out of Montebello, California, please welcome Victor Barrerio.
Montebello in the house. Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be a part of this.
So before we get into, you know, producing live events, the red carpets, all of those specials, tell us a bit about growing up as a queer kid in East LA and how your journey began in the entertainment industry. Was it always something that you sort of looked to, that you were interested in?
Well, yes, as you said, as you mentioned, I grew up in Montebello, and I had such a different story from my fellow peers that work in entertainment, because you hear very often that, you know, they go to school, then they go to college, they have an internship, and then possibly that internship may lead into a job. But it was very, very different for me. So I'll just start from the beginning. You know, growing up in Montebello as a young kid, I actually didn't have aspirations of being in entertainment. I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid. I'm still fascinated with space to this day, but obviously I focus on different stars. That was cheesy, right? growing up, I always was fascinated with astronomy and planets and space and all that. But things took a turn when I was 13 years old. My cousin used to come out on the Wonder Years. He was an extra, but he was constantly being called. And one day he said, he's like, Vic, why don't you come with me? You don't have school the next day. And I'm like, for what? Like, I was so not interested. And he's like, come and, you know, see what it's about. I'm like, I guess, again, not interested. We went to the sports arena, the Coliseum here in LA. From the moment I stepped in, I fell in love. I'm like, wow, from the lights, the camera, the action, just the whole environment. I'm like, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. And so that's, you know, that's me being 13 years old and growing up in Montebello as this kid who really didn't know anything other than wanting to be an astronaut. But obviously those things changed. And so I quickly started asking questions like my cousin, hey, so what do I have to do next? Like, you know, get some headshots. And then my mom enrolled me in just some acting classes. But I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do in that industry. I just knew I wanted to be a part of it. And then comes high school. I was fortunate enough to go to the LA County High School for the Arts, which was an amazing experience because for so many reasons. Like, here I am, this 14-year-old kid. Unfortunately, at the time, they didn't have ninth graders, so I had to come in as a sophomore. So I went to Scherer High School now. I went to Scherer for 1 year, and then I had to begin the audition process. And it was tough because it's not just like, oh, I want to go to LOXA. That's what it's called, you know, Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. You don't just show up and enroll. It's an audition process. You have to have grades, you know, letters of recommendation. So I got in, I majored in theater, and that's where this internship came about. It was my summer, the summer of my junior year to my senior year. Yet again, an opportunity arose, and it was for this amazing internship program called Yes to Jobs. It stands for Youth Employment Summer. And that was also something that was really difficult to get into because there were only so many spots. So I applied, I got through the application process. I went in for an interview with Yes to Jobs. But once you pass that interview with Yes to Jobs, it's not guaranteed that you're going to get this internship mm-hmm. because you're competing with numerous students for this one spot. And I can remember it as if it were yesterday, 16-year-old little me, Mexicano from, you know, Montebello going into E. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. Seeing the lights and seeing just the whole environment of this network that I was a fan of. So I go and I interview with three executives who I'm still really close to this day. And I still work with to this day. I had something in common with every single one. And I left, you know, just thinking, okay, that was cool. That was great. Well, I get a call later that day from Human Resources and they asked me, you know, how did the interview go? I said, I think it went well. She's like, well, it went better than well because you got the job. I was like, what? You know, so happy, so excited. And so, yeah, that summer of 1998, I was an intern with E's live events department. And that literally changed my life because I didn't know what live TV meant. What does that mean? What does that look like? And it was during that summer that I quickly, I mean, they literally would give me every opportunity that was possible. If they were going to do a set visit, like ER, I went to that set so long ago, but if they were going to do a set visit or they were going to do a celebrity interview, they always allowed me to be a part of that, which was amazing. And I'm so, so thankful and so grateful. And I really wish that there were programs like that, especially for minorities. I wish programs like that still existed to this day. But yes, that is where my television career was born. When that internship was over, they said, we want you back. You have a job here waiting for you at E on one condition. You have to continue going to school. So I did. I graduated high school in 99, and I went that summer to E, just as they had said, and I started working as a full-time, well, not full-time, but part-time, because I had to go to school. But that is where I met the late Joan Rivers and Melissa Rivers, because at the time they were the stars of the network. And I mean, that's a whole nother experience right there. But that's learning what live television was awesome, because like I also started from the bottom. So I worked as a production assistant and then worked my way up, which I think is so important, especially when you're like in an executive role, because you want to be able to appreciate every single person that's part of the team. If you're just thrown into a position and you don't know what is that coordinator doing, or what is that AP, what does he do or what does she do? So it's just so important to know every single aspect of production. And I really feel blessed that I was able to be a part of that and to learn that.
So Victor, let me ask you, so when you were taking us back and sort of like that first time you walked into E and, you know, the lights and all that. Now, did you see other Latinos working around there? Like, were you one of, okay. So he's shaking his head. No, everybody.
I did.
So what was that like? Like you step in, you know that you're attracted to this, you know, life, you want to see yourself there, but yet you see no one around you that looks like you. Like what was that feeling like? And in some ways, did that push you harder?
I mean, that's a great question. Yes. There were no others that looked like me. And often they would joke and say, this is Victor. He's 16 going on 40, because I was so mature. And I had to also be, you know, mature very, very quickly. I mean, of course I still had my friends that were my age. And of course we still did things in the summer, but I had to really show up, as they say. And no, I did not see other Latinos around me or folks that look like me. So for me, it meant a lot to also represent my people in the best possible way.
Yeah. And especially when you're working in that sort of live space and, you know, it's not scripted, television program. So you want it to sort of reflect what real life is. And yeah, Here you are, a young Latino from Montebello.
Yeah. And, you know, fortunately, social media did not exist at that time. Yeah. But I was also still very conscious and very careful and very aware of when I would be at a party. Like I didn't want to have or take pictures of me just doing dumb things. I mean, granted, we're teens, we're having fun, but I also felt a responsibility because of this internship. And growing up, my mom never gave me a curfew because she knew that I knew what was important and when I had to be home. And one thing I left out, because my mom was so excited that I got this internship, again, 16 years old, 1998, she says, you want a car? Go find it. Before computers really existed, there I am on the yellow pages looking for a brand new car. And so that summer, like, I felt like I was the king of the world. I had this amazing internship, and then I had a brand new Honda Civic. I was so excited.
And so, you know, this is the late 90s. A lot of, you know, television did not look the way that it looks like right now. Right now, there are a lot of POC shows, a lot of shows appealing to multicultural audiences, but late 90s, not a whole lot. You know, Victor, I love you, and we go way back. You know, I was telling the guys the other day that, you know, I joined Fox in 2000, and one of the shows I worked on the most was Teen Choice Awards. And so I think that you and I probably crossed paths first there. Yeah. So like a red carpet at the Teen Choice Awards, that is massive for everybody that doesn't know. That is no joke. It literally will go on and on and on. And the stars get out on it and they'll be on there for an hour and a half. doing all the outlets and then getting into photo. So for me, you know, and this was 2000 when I joined, for me to be running around there and for me to see maybe a handful of Latinos, you know, and then to drill it down into gay Latinos or LGBTQ plus Latinos, we're talking about maybe just me and you at that point, you know, like, and so, you know, you always were very inspiring to me when I would see you like running around, like, you know, running the show. And, you know, that was the beginning, but then I saw you continue to like flourish and the Oscars and all of that. So we want to hear all about, you know, tidbits and stories that you have, but I really want people to, you know, get a sense of what you do now, you know, because your role is very different. It's not like I can say, you know, Victor's a publicist, or, you know, last week we had Moises from Selena, the series on here, like a creator. Your role is very unique and very, there's just not a lot of them. You know, so can you tell us a little bit about where you are now and what you do now?
Yeah. So in order for me to stay employed, I like to say, well, I didn't call myself this. I just started saying it after someone said it about me, a jack of all trades. And that's when you are a freelancer or when you're a consultant, you really have to be a jack of all trades to stay employed. Currently, I'm a show producer on a series called Plus Life, which can be seen on Localish. Yay. And what I do on that show is I supervise a team of editors. It's not a big team, especially because of COVID, where we're working from home. And so what I have to do is I have to conduct these interviews with folks from all walks of life. I do it via Skype. We record an interview with them and they just tell us about their story. So I have to come up with, you know, the questions, what's the angle of the story. And then we do the interview on Skype and then it gets obviously edited. And then I have to look at the cut and decide what can come out or what can stay in, because also we're working within time restrictions. I mean, we only have 22 minutes to tell every episode. And so once the segment is cut down, then I have to write what are called the show wraps. And for those who don't know, a show wrap is basically an introduction. It's like the intro of the show and then what we call a tag, which is our host reacting to what, you know, they just saw, what they just heard from the segment, and then teasing us to break. And then it just repeats itself for the following segments. So that's what I'm currently doing right now because of COVID. But normally I am a producer on the whatever pre-show is happening. I'm typically, fortunately, working it. And so depending on the show, my role always changes. I'll give you an example for the Golden Globes, which is one of my favorite shows to produce on every year. Yeah. Typically what happens is in December, like right now, I would be knee deep in research. So if you're watching our pre-show leading up to the show itself, I literally will write 4 questions on every nominee. That's a lot of cards. And so it's a lot of research, but I love it. I love doing it. I love writing. I love being creative. The day of the show, I will be producing one of our talent. Typically, I'm always at what we call arrivals. So I'm always when a celebrity arrives, especially the Globes, it's such a different red carpet because they're literally driving on the street, which is Wilshire Boulevard, and you see a circular stage that's right in front. So what I love about live TV is the adrenaline. We are live. Yeah. This is not taped. So there's no like, oh, let's do that again. I'm always having to think 5 steps ahead. I have to have plan A, B, C, and D, because sometimes we're waiting. We might be waiting for a big talent like a Beyonce. And I'm hearing, you know, in my ear, she's going to be with us in about 2 minutes. Well, maybe there's a traffic jam. So you can't always just bank on this celebrity going, you know, to be arriving in those 2 minutes. So it's like, well, what do we do next? And the cool thing about being on the field is I'm seeing everything that's happening. And what you folks at home don't know is that the show is being also run through what we call the truck. That's where the directors sit. That's where the assistant director, the executives. So I'm the eyes and ears on the field. They can only see, they being the directors and the executive producers, only see through the cameras. So they don't know what the traffic jam is looking like. So what I have to do also too with my talent is I have to prep them. So I'm prepping them. If I see a celebrity coming up, I will quickly jump in. If we're not in our position, like if we're not live on our position, I'll have to just quickly give them a rundown of like what we should be asking. And I'm hearing like 30 seconds in my ear. Sometimes they may want to come back to that host because there's multiple positions on the red carpet. You know, we have maybe six hosts. So there's two hosts at each position. They might be at another position. All of a sudden I'm hearing, Victor, we're going to come back to you. So I have to quickly run off the stage and like be on the side and just be standing by. But it's just, it's the best feeling. There's nothing like it in the world. And when I hear my host saying goodbye, thanks so much. And they thank the viewers, you know, it's like this big sigh of relief. Cause it's like, whoa, what just happened? But it's such a high. It's the best feeling in the world. And I wouldn't want to be any other place.
Have you ever had a conflict where, let's just say we're like, example, Mariah Carey and Beyonce are at the exact same moment where you have two big celebrities, like who do you do first or do you do both? Or like, have you ever had that conflict?
Oh, all the time. Absolutely. And that's such a great question. And what people at home are not seeing is me in that moment. Yes, we do have somebody who's working with us that's called a talent executive. Their job is to sort of handle that. But sometimes I get passed on the celebrity and it's like, oh, what do? You've got to make decisions very quickly, but it's also being very polite about it, being very, you know, just being polite, because sometimes you're going to have like a Nicole Kidman and then a Reese Witherspoon is standing by as well. And you're like, what do we do here? And you got to think very quickly. It's not just like, no, it's like, all right, Nicole, we're going to take you first. But then what I'll be doing is on my headset, I'm telling our executives, I'm like, I have Reese standing by. We should do what's called a hot change, which is like our host will say, all right, Reese, thanks so much. Or if they're talking to Nicole, Nicole, thank you so much for being with us. And you have a great night. And they sort of have to like friendly push her away. And then like, and now joining us is Reese Witherspoon. So that's called a hot change.
Oh, shit. So
it's just working. Yeah. It's kind of like politely. Thank you very much but it's also happened where I've told, like, for instance, I will tell Reese, I'm like, Reese, Nicole is going to be gently pushed off the stage. You step in, of course, feel free to say hi. Okay. Got it. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes they just stay there and talking. And it's like those magic moments in live TV that we live for. Or sometimes a talent will crash an interview. Like that's happened before.
Yeah.
Where they just jump up on the stage and we're like, whoa. But we like those kind of moments.
I love that. Yeah.
It's the behind the scenes stuff that not everybody gets to see that is so awesome. It's so amazing. I actually want to write a book one day about, you know, my stories. Like I'm not looking to write a book to win an award, just to share my stories because there's so many. There's so many.
Funny that you say that. As I do this hot change with and push Eric away here and ask you a question now. We wanted to ask you about some of those stories. You know, we were talking about it. We're like, wait, this is like a 20-year career. All the red carpets, all the big, you know, I've seen you there. Like I said, starting at Teen Choice and going on and on and on. When you look back, you know, and I know, I'm sure you probably have a lot of great memories with Joan Rivers as well, you know, and Melissa Rivers as well. But like, what sort of stands out, you know, 20-year career, what do you think about, like, what are those moments that you're like, damn, you know, like that was, you know.
Roman, first of all, Joan Rivers, or Mrs. Czar, as we used to call her, was such a remarkable person. She was so loving, so giving. And because of her, honestly, because of her, so many doors opened. Like I was a young production coordinator at TV Guide Network when they were there, because let me just back it up a little bit. So when I was a production assistant at E, about 2 years into it, Joan and Melissa approached me, their team, and said, we want you to come work for us. So I went to work personally for them as their personal assistant for 3 years. And it was a great experience. I mean, a wonderful experience. Love, love, love them and love the team. A lot of them were still there working with Joan up until her death because they were faithful. And because Joan and Melissa operate such an amazing production, they really, really do. And you would think because of the name, and I often got this a lot too from others, like, wow, if you can work for Joan, you can work for anyone. I'm like, actually, she's like super sweet and like the easiest person to work for. So when I left to go work for some other celebs, and there was no bad blood, nothing, no drama. It was just, I wanted to try something different and they understood. I went back to them and said, I want to go back to TV. So when I was at TV Guide as a production coordinator, I quickly moved up because of Joan, because she said, no, Victor's going to produce me. Well, Joan, he's a little young. No, he can do it. So because of that, Joan lived in New York. I would have to constantly, I was on a plane. Anything Joan Rivers related, I had to oversee. And because I knew the team, like it was amazing. Joan and I would have this moment that we would call a diva drop, which I was just telling someone about it the other day. So there I was, you know, waiting for Joan, her limo would pull up, here she gets out. And of course people are like, oh my God, it's Joan Rivers. And there I am. Hello, Mrs. R, kiss, hug. And we would walk towards the elevator and she goes, let's do a diva drop. I'm like, let's do it. So what that meant was that here she is holding her $60,000 Birkin bag. She drops the bag on the floor and keeps walking. And I'm like looking all scared, like the assistant, I pick up her bag and go running after her. We get in the elevator, the doors would close and we're like, bah! Did you see the look on their face? We just loved having a good time. But she is so missed. Oh God, she is so missed. I wish she were still around. I really do. And like I said, because of her name, so many doors opened for me and so many opportunities, and I am forever grateful. I have so many wonderful memories with her. I really do. And the other day I was looking through a box of pictures. I forgot some pictures that I don't remember that I had. And it just goes to show you, you know, from like young Victor to 15 years later, just how many opportunities I had with her and with them.
We have our own diva drop here between Eric and Jose, but before that means totally something different. But before we get into that, so, you know, the other day I was having a conversation with Rembrandt Flores, or I wasn't having a conversation with him, but he was doing a talk, and he's another one back in the day, you know, there was just a handful of us gay POCs out there. And he said something really interesting. He said, you know, when you're in those live situations, like we were in those award shows, when you're in those event situations, sometimes you forget to enjoy it. You forget because you're working, you know, and that happened to me several times, you know, and I think back, I'm like, oh my God, Britney Spears, like, is right in front of me, like Destiny's Child, like Dolly Parton. I have all these stories and, you know, fortunately there were some that I got to interact with, but some that I don't even know how to explain it, but you're so focused on it. You're working, you're tired, and Teen Choice, it's like 100 degrees, you know, like, and the last thing, it's like, you know, and then you realize it after, you're like, oh my God, that was like beyond, Destiny's Child was walking right towards me, and I went the other way, like, you know. So was there ever a time where you, you know, sort of look back and was like, you know, I wish that I would have enjoyed that a little more, like it was, or do you feel like you always, you know, took advantage of the fruits of your labor?
Yeah, no, I definitely, when I get there, and as corny as it's going to sound, I really do take a moment. I'm like, oh my God, I'm on the Oscars red carpet about to produce on the Oscars pre-show. I don't forget where I came from. I always remember. And I always remember to give thanks because I think it's so important. There are so many people that could be filling the positions that I do. And I'm very aware of that. The fact that they continue to call me back for these shows and that I still work with some of these people is not something I take for granted. You were asking about a moment. There is one moment that stands out for me. I mean, I, like you, Roman, you know, we've been around celebrities for so long. I've been around some of the biggest stars in the world and have even had to produce them. So for me, I don't get starstruck, but, you know, of course I have moments where I'm a fan of maybe someone's movie. I'm a fan of maybe a song. The Emmys, I want to say, was maybe like 4 years ago. Hank Azaria had won for guest acting on one of the shows. And what happens is, so every year I normally produce for the Emmys, I do their what's called Emmys Backstage Live. It's literally live as the main show is live. We get all the winners. The minute the winners step off the stage, they come to me and my host is live interviewing them. So of course I'm there prepping my host. So Hank comes over and I'm, you know, standing with him and I tell the truck, our producers, I'm like, hey, I have Hank Azaria standing by. Great. We're going to take him just as soon as we get out of this package. So I'm there talking to Hank as I normally would with any actor or singer, just sort of like, so they don't get bored, just kind of, and also prepping them, letting them know what's about to happen. And I said, should I do it? Okay, here I go. I said, Hank, the other day, one of my favorite films was on TV, The Birdcage. I mean, come on. He looks at me and says, "Are you afraid of my Guatemalan-ness?" I'm like, okay, I can die now. That was an awesome moment because that's one of my favorite films.
That's awesome.
That's hilarious.
It has been so great, like, catching up with you. And there's one thing I really want you to let the listeners in on, or you know, give some advice, because a young Latino growing up so close to Hollywood, you know what I mean? That you can taste it, okay? There's a lot of gay Latinos in East LA, Boyle Heights, all over the place, that I get asked all the time about how did I do it? You know, they want to do it. What kind of advice do you have for somebody who's growing up right now, a young gay Latino, lesbian, trans, somebody who wants that life?
I mean, fortunately, internships still exist to this day, and I don't think they're that hard to get. I mean, depending on, you know, how hungry you are, just look at, well, figure out what it is you want to do. And there are some folks that I hear that, oh, I don't really know what I want to do. I just want to be in that business. And that's okay. That's what internships are for you to experience something and see if it's for you, if it's a good fit. So I would suggest looking up internship maybe programs, or if there's a specific place that they want to work out, reaching out to them and ask, is there opportunity for an intern, or what types of programs do they have? Because a number of times, some of these big corporations or just big places will have some kind of a program where they'll allow interns to come in.
All right, I'm going to toss to Eric right now to kind of sort of lead us out.
No, just thank you so much, Victor, for like literally, you know, joining us, coming through, showing the love, and then explaining your story, because we don't hear a lot about behind the scenes and representation within our communities, you know, especially with us being Latinx and also gay. So it's always a positive to shed that light and to show that you don't have to always be in front of the camera. You can always do stuff behind the scenes. We have our hand in everything that we do. You know, there's something that we can contribute to our community and make us proud. And you're one of those people that's making us proud. What are your social media outlets? Where can people find you to get more information?
At Victor Barrero on Insta.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. All right, guys. Well, you heard it. Victor Barrero, that's what's up. My SJV brother, love you. Thank you so much. And we're going to go on a little break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Homo Homie Podcast. What a conversation that we had. Oh my gosh. Roman, thank you so much for bringing Jose and Victor on and, you know, sharing their journey with us and what they do for our community and in the entertainment field, because I mean, it's needed. We need that representation like we've discussed throughout this, and there are warriors.
Yeah. LGBTQ warriors. Don't get it twisted.
Okay.
You know, I loved the, you know, having both of them on. They're both so very different. Their careers are both really different and they grew up very different. You know, there are some common threads that I loved, you know, like they both have, you know, a lot of experience and a lot of moments in their career where sort of, you know, key moments that sort of were defining points in their career where they were able to make a difference yeah. As a gay Latino. You know, both of them have strong relationships in the industry, and that is very key. I always get asked by young people, how do I get a job in the industry, or what, you know, should I do this or that? And I always emphasize that relationships are key. They will follow you everywhere, and all of these moments will come together like threads. I particularly loved Jose mentioning GLAAD a couple of times, because GLAAD is there for that positive portrayal in media representation. And there's a woman at GLAAD, Monica Trascendes, who Jose Rodriguez and Jose Resendez also work, you know, with closely. And, you know, a position like that, where you're at GLAAD for LGBTQ representation, but specifically Latino representation, you know, that is a very interesting role. And I'm glad that Jose Rodriguez works very closely with her when it comes to working on the films. I'm excited because
that, warrior.
Yeah, she's definitely another warrior, and I'm excited because I have a phone call set up for Monday, and I think I'm going to talk about this podcast episode and encourage her to listen to it, because you know, there's a lot of passion there from both of these guys, and I was really happy that we were able to do this. Guys, thank you.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I really enjoyed the fact that they're both Latinos, they're both queer, and they're representing us in different parts of the community, but they have such ambition, they have goals, and they're doing it.
Then they're both cute.
Yeah, they're both very handsome.
Easy on the eyes, right? They're both easy.
Wait,
on the
are they both single? I gotta text them.
Oh, there she goes. She's going to the DMs. And talking about DMs, we want to remind you guys to go ahead and follow us again on social media at The Homo Homie Podcast, or you can go to thehomohomiepodcast.com, which is still in construction. But we do have our site where you can go to any streaming platform like iHeart, Spotify, wherever you can find us. And follow us at The Homo Homie. You can follow Jose at The Jose Resendez, or you can follow Roman at Roman Randall Navarrete. Girl, you need to change that. That's a big, long word, okay? We need to condense it.
Should be like the Roman. Yeah, and actually, please make sure to leave us a review and rate us on Apple specifically, because that really helps with getting our podcast out there. And I wanna challenge everyone that's listening to really take the time to share this episode with especially those young people that are getting into the business, or that have those dreams of like, I'm going to move to Hollywood and make it and this and that, or they're figuring out what they're majoring in college and they want to get into film and TV production. And, you know, there's so many people that think that it's just glitz and glamour and fabulosity and red carpets. And so this is a prime example of the uphill battle that it is, not only for representation, but just having this as a career, you know. And Roman has had a long career in this, and us too, like working in this business, it's not a walk in the park, you know. So yeah, definitely share this episode with your homo homies, but also with those people that can relate to these stories.
Yeah, and also don't forget to, you know, hit us up and let us know what else you want to know about the fields, because it's just not, I mean, we've brought in you writers, we've brought in you actors, we've had people like
directors
like, and then Jose and Victor. So I mean, there's more to this world that you can get out of, and we want to know what parts of those areas that you're looking into and that you want to get to know better, so we can go ahead and bring that to you guys.
Yeah, we want to hear, you know, all of the shows and pieces of content that you're enjoying, you know, especially during COVID, all the LGBTQ representation, whether that be on television, on a film maybe you didn't see a few years ago. I just saw something the other day on Hulu called Happiest Season in the lesbian space. And, you know, comment on our social media. The three of us all get a lot of DMs from all of you guys, and thank you for the compliments and, you know, for the encouraging words and for us to keep going. But we definitely want to make it a two-way street, and we want to hear from you some of your likes and dislikes and what you're enjoying, especially in the pop culture space.
And thank you guys, because it's us three that are working at this podcast, and we are doing our job just to, you know, be a better representation for our community, bring light and be there, you know, be the warriors that we are, the queer warriors, LGBTQ warriors. And thank you so much, Roman. Thank you, Jose, for doing that and helping me build this podcast and, you know, get there. And thank you to Roman Navarrete, our co-producer, for joining us and bringing his two guests with us today. And also thank you to Jose Resendez, my amazing co-host. And thank you to you, the listener, for always, you know, reposting and sharing and following us and shouting us out with your friends. As always, guys, just remember to be good or be good at it, but be safe. Love you. Bye.
Bye, guys. Later.
Bye, everybody.